Hello, welcome back to All Figured Out. I'm Andrea Barr. Thank you for joining me again this week. And I am so excited to bring you Dr. Valerie Herzog today. She is such a sweetheart. She is just an incredible person, very impressive, and just so down to earth. So she is a medical doctor, a wellness coach, a mom of three, including twins in there. And she empowers others to stop putting their health on the back burner so they can be healthier, feel more energized, and thrive in their everyday lives. Yes, she is a medical doctor. She still practices, but she also does wellness coaching as well. She did her yoga teacher training. She is trained in CBT, which is cognitive behavior therapy. She's done motivational interviewing, positive psychology. Like, she's so cool. And she really takes that approach that I think so many of us, I know I'm raising my hand, crave. She takes that approach of the medical doctor side, but also a more holistic side. And she really, truly believes in preventative healthcare. And she's just a pleasure to chat with. So I hope you really enjoy this episode. What you're going to get from our chat today, she's going to be breaking down how you can prioritize your health as a parent, which I know can be so hard for all of us to make that space. And once we make the space for it, where do you even start? So we're going to be talking about Dr. Valerie's life-altering autoimmune diagnosis during medical school. She has an absolutely wild story with her own health journey. She's going to talk about her four pillars of health and how you can optimize each one, what you need to know about your sleep. And I even asked her about napping, which her answer was so interesting. She talks about the medical definition of stress and what it does to us long-term. And she even talks about how you can be more active when you're starting from basically nothing. So tune in. There's so much in here, but you're going to feel, I know it, really uplifted and inspired. And we're not going to be adding a bunch of things to your to-do list because nobody's got time for that. But you will be able to take away some really key things to optimize your own health like ASAP. So I hope you enjoy. You're listening to the All Figured Out podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Barr. As a career coach for parents, a mom, an entrepreneur, and someone who spent 10 plus years in the corporate world, I still don't have it all figured out. And maybe you don't either. In this podcast, I'll share tools and strategies that I use with my clients. And in the many areas where I don't have things figured out, I'll be bringing you some amazing guest experts to help us fill in the gaps. So tune in each week as we explore how to make career and life decisions that truly work for you, your family, and your big goals. Let's make moves. Dr. Valerie Herzog, thank you so much for joining me on the All Figured Out podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I am so excited for a chat. We were tagging each other on Instagram about this chat today. You were doing your to-do list. I love when people do that. I think it's so fun getting to see into other people's lives and what's on their to-do list. You had a big one today, one of them being recording this podcast. And I said to you, oh my goodness, I'm so excited to have you because I have so many questions. Like always, I'm reining myself in, tried to come up with a few questions, and I'm just going to try to keep this under 3 hours. I'm kidding. First of all, you said that you had dance class. You've got to tell me more about your dance class. What is it that you do?
Yeah. No, thanks. Yeah, I love it. I decided back in the fall I would give it a try. One of my friends told me about it, and it's an amazing teacher at Dance with Emily, and she does bring it back all levels. So you get to go and just have fun dancing to music from the 90s and early 2000s, and it's just so much fun. I'm definitely not a dancer. This is not in my comfort zone, but I just love it so much and have a blast every time.
Oh, good for you. That's so inspiring. I had to ask because I'm like, there's so many people I know, myself included, who are like hunting around for hobbies and things like that. So much fun. Okay, but let's get down to business. I would love for you to share with everybody, myself included, because I don't know too much about the story, but share with us your journey to becoming a medical doctor, now coach, mom of three, including twins. We're having a bit of a twin moment, by the way, on the podcast. You're my second twin mom in the last couple of weeks. So anyways, tell us your story. It's got to be a big one. How did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I guess when it goes back to when I decided to become a doctor and all of that. So I always knew I wanted to help people and I wasn't really sure in what capacity, but ended up studying health sciences and psychology at university, and it just led me to the medicine. It just made sense as the next possible step. And the journey there, though, was always a little bit more complicated for me, a little bit more difficult. Like, it felt just always like very like stressful, and like I was pushing through and just I knew I could do it, but it felt like a lot. And all along the way, as I was starting to go into medical school, once I was in medical school, and I almost felt also like I didn't quite fit in. Like I kind of have a different approach to health. And seeing like firsthand what the medical system was like was quite jarring to see the hospital system and the sick care that we were providing to patients. So I felt, yeah, I wanted something different, but I wasn't really sure how to make that work within the confines of the medical system. So I was always in the kind of...
Sorry to interrupt, but do you mean it was like the, when you have a problem, you go see the doctor? That's what you were struggling with a little bit? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And not so much focus on prevention and a healthy lifestyle. I had grown up with that approach, more of a holistic approach to health. And yeah, I felt like it was lacking for sure in the medical system, and partly just because of like necessity, right? Like we're, the medical system's already so overloaded and busy and there's not a lot of time for things like that. So yeah, so that was one thing. And then also personally, the impact that being a medical student had on my life, where just the crazy, insane hours of work, like spending like 24 to 30 hours at the hospital and not obviously being able to prioritize my own health while I was studying to be a doctor and being part of the medical system, but then also seeing all the negative impacts that it was having on my health and on my stress level. Yeah, so there was just a lot going on in those couple of years. And yeah, it was just a very busy time. And it's when I like met my husband, fell in love. There was a lot of positive things that happened as well. But then within that time frame as well, I started developing an autoimmune condition where I started to lose my hair in a pretty rapid fashion. So all of that kind of got to the point where I think I was basically on the edge of burnout, just feeling like really tired and overwhelmed and stressed and not quite sure like what to do next and how to reclaim control of my health and feel empowered and yeah, confident and in control again. So that was in the span of about 4 years. And within that time frame, I also got engaged and we ended up getting married like 3 days after I graduated from medical school.
Were you planning a wedding while you were in medical school?
I was, yes.
No.
Yes. Yeah. That's yeah. I was losing my hair at the same time, about 6 months before the wedding. Yeah.
Oh my God. I can't even imagine. And I imagine there's a lot of exams happening, testing.
Yes. Yes. Oh. Yes. And I was at a pretty traditional medical school where you would have exams every sort of 6 to 8 weeks. And then at the end of medical school, there's a big licensing exam as well. So yeah, a lot of studying and yeah, a lot to stress and work and yeah, all the things.
Graduate, a wedding, and your autoimmune disorder that was waking up, sounds like, at that time.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Keep going. Let's get the whole journey out there and then we are going to pick everything apart because I had, of course, so many questions. But wow, I can just like feel, I can only imagine what that was like. So you graduate medical school, you have your wedding. What did you fall straight into the traditional medicine at that point?
Yeah. So I ended up going into family medicine to do a residency program. So I finished medical school, which was 4 years. And then after that, I did 2 years of residency training. So within all of that, I was trying to figure out like where I was going to go. And it's a bit of a stressful journey just in terms of figuring out what school you're going to go to and interviews. And then there's a match system. So you don't really have full control over where you end up. But I was lucky where I ended up back home, back in Ottawa, where I'm from. And we moved, I was in the time to Ottawa so that I could do my residency training here. So I did 2 more years. And at that point, it felt like things were settling down a little bit for me. I was closer to family. I still had the hair loss, like the hair loss hasn't gone away. Like it's a chronic condition that I haven't had since then. So that kind of was there, but like I had gotten used to it at that point. I had found ways to deal with it. I was wearing wigs and I had figured out makeup and different things that we lost because the condition I have is complete hair loss. So like complete scalp and then eyebrows, eyelashes, like full body. So all of that, yeah, I hadn't really had the time to process it, but it had at least stabilized. And yeah, so I ended up completing those extra 2 years. And then after that ended, I really felt like I really needed a break and really needed to take some time for me. So I ended up taking a few months off after I completed all of my training and kind of went back to basics during that time and tried to figure out like what I wanted to do next. The same things I had been feeling at the beginning of medical school where I wasn't quite sure I fit in and I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with a medical degree, all of that came back up and it gave me a bit of time to pause and to figure out my next steps.
Wow. Wow. Thank you for sharing all of that. That's a huge, I can only imagine that's just a huge phase of your life. And I assume at that point you're in your late 20s, maybe early 30s too, which people don't talk about, I don't know, personally, I don't feel like people talk about that phase of life enough where
yeah,
you're I don't know. I think it's more so than when you're turning like 18 or 20, 22. Like, you're not really expected to be an adult, but by that phase of life, there's a lot of big decisions happening. So I can only imagine the stress. And then you get married and people start asking you, when are you having kids? And you're trying to navigate your career and where that's taking you. And like you said, processing a condition that, of course, I assume you didn't know was coming unless it was genetic or something like that. Oh my goodness. So you started practicing medicine as a family doctor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And at what point, when did you have your kids? I know you have three.
Yes. Yeah. So after I took that pause, those couple of months, I ended up dabbling. I did different things like walk-in clinics and locums and was just trying all different things to figure out what I wanted to do. And by the time I turned 30, I felt again, like more stable. I had the time to process. And I had at that point taken back control of my health, really focusing on like key sustainable healthy habits. And I had, just a really great relationship with my husband. And we felt both ready to at least try and see what would happen in terms of having kids. So that was, So that's when we ended up having our son in 2017. Yeah. And that's when everything shifted once again, when I became a parent.
You're like, I got it all figured out. And children.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. And I have to ask, when you said you felt like you got things under control, or not a great word to use the word control, but like you were like feeling on top of things, what kinds of things were you doing to get there mentally and physically to be ready to have children?
Yeah, I think like in terms of my work life, I had set some pretty strong boundaries. Like I knew having gone through the medical training that I didn't want to be on call. I didn't want to work 24, 30 hours. Like it just wasn't for me and it wasn't sustainable in the long run. And I needed to focus on my health if I wanted to help others in any capacity, both professionally and just personally being there for my loved ones and my husband. So I had set up a schedule that made sense. I'm in clinic. I worked part-time for the government, regular hours. It made sense. It felt good. And I was doing what I felt was meaningful work as well. So that piece was in place. And then I think just personally, things felt pretty stable as well. I did it with my husband at that point for about 7 years. And we just felt like that was the next logical step. We both wanted to have children. And we felt as ready as you can be. Obviously, you never be ready.
No. Oh my gosh. Totally. That's really interesting to hear that you were able to make your schedule and your routines and the working rhythms work for you. Because my preconceived notion would have been that in the medical system, in that type of job, being a family doctor, that you would have been there wouldn't have been as much flexibility. Like it would have been like, these are the hours and you have to work here full time. We have a girlfriend. Hi, Gabs, if you're listening. And she is a medical doctor and she has been able to make her schedule work for her as well. And so I'm only just realizing that these jobs that we all think are so rigid, it's like inspiring to know that all you have to do is just A, ask, or B, look around and see how you might make the working situation work for you and your family. And not just feeling like, oh, okay, because I'm a medical doctor, because I'm a family doctor, I have to work Monday to Friday, be there for my patients every single day, 9 to 5. But there's different ways that all these jobs and careers can manifest and how they might look. So I don't know, I just wanted to just acknowledge that's really cool that you were able to do what works for you, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, thank you. It's true. Yeah. And sometimes when you're going through the system or in your education and you don't really see those different paths, but that was something that I explored after I finished my training and felt like I had to do what was best for me and figure out my own path.
Yes, because you got clear first. You're like, okay, noted, the 30 hours in the hospital is not for me. It's great for Jane over there, but it's not great for me. Okay, so you have your son. Tell me about that journey. What was that like?
Yeah, everything for sure shifted. And I think right away, too, with having a child, like your sense of control shifts as well. And even in terms of how he arrived, everything was not quite as planned in terms of my son with breech. So I had to have and then the recovery was a bit tougher from the C-section as well. So just right away, that was, not what I expected. And it was also a time personally, too. We had just sold our condo. We hadn't found our home yet. So we ended up moving in with my family, with my parents. So I was there when I had my son. And so just like everything was out of my control and things were shifting for sure. And then I also ended up going back to work at about 5 months part time, going back to clinic because, again, there was some pressure to go back. And so it definitely, things were quite different once he was in the picture, and wonderful and lots of amazing things. But just my priorities, I felt shifted again. I felt like I had things sorted in such a way. And then once my son came, I felt like I had to shift things again and make sure that I prioritized my time and my energy and could really be there for him and for my family. But also I wanted to also get back to work and, yeah, figure out my way forward with my career.
Yeah. Was that the right decision for you? So you went back at 5 months. How did it feel reintegrating into the workforce?
Yeah, it definitely felt like the right decision at the time. And I did have great support as well, which I really want to acknowledge because my parents were the ones that were taking care of my son while I was in clinic. And it was only 2 days a week. So I did have that flexibility where I could be home the rest of the time. Yeah, so it did work out well. But there were challenges and I was breastfeeding and pumping. So doing that while at work as well came with its whole other host of challenges.
Every mother listening who has ever pumped is like, oh, God, you poor thing. But also good on you. Good on you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how was your health at this time? So I guess that's an undercurrent of your story would be managing your autoimmune. And you said complete hair loss. That's an incredible thing to go through. And did it come with other pieces to it that you were having to and probably still managing?
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm lucky in the sense that the condition I have, which is it's called alopecia universalis, it is very much a cosmetic condition. It's physical hair loss. I think at the time where it happened, there was a lot of underlying stress and fatigue and overwhelm that contributed, but the condition itself isn't associated necessarily with that and doesn't come with other symptoms. It really is a physical, more of a physical manifestation. I was lucky in that I don't have chronic symptoms. It's really just dealing with the physical changes. And I think dealing with a whole new sense of identity that came along in terms of even just when it happened, looking at myself in the mirror and not recognizing myself and just the physical changes that came. So I call it a life altering diagnosis. It doesn't affect my life in other ways except for more of the cosmetics and the physical changes. And yeah, and even it's just a day to day having to think about that. And
how did that change your relationship with looking in the mirror and things like that? Did it force you to grow in a way in terms of the word vanity where you've, I'm saying this because I just imagine that you have a totally different relationship than other people with physical appearance and that sort of thing. What did that do for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it definitely shifted how I viewed myself and my physical appearance. And what I think was interesting too, is that being pregnant actually helped me find a new sense of self-love, where I really felt so empowered and honored that my body was doing the amazing things that it was doing. So I almost reconnected with myself in pregnancy, which was really neat. And then I think after having my son too, just being really thankful for my body, all it does for me, and focusing more on the things that it does as opposed to the way that it looks, focusing on the strength that I have and everything that I'm able to do in my day-to-day life, which I'm still working on. I think we all, it's a journey, right? And I have my moments where, self-pity and that sort of thing, but get out of it and focus on the positives and everything that I do have.
Yeah. It's like when you have I'm not comparing this, but you have a headache. I had a headache on the weekend. And I'm like, all I can think about is the headache. And all I'm thinking about is why me? How annoying. And it's true when you step out and you say, wow, what everything I have my health. In a general sense and all of that, it is fascinating and hard. And two things could be true at once, which I totally know. So you have your son, you go back to work. And at what point did you make that career pivot? And at what point did your twins come in? Tell me the whole latter half of the story.
Yeah. So I think this all happened again around the time where I had my twins, where I was shifting away. I was trying to figure out what my long-term plan was. And I knew that I wanted to get into a more holistic approach to health. And even though in my medical practice, I'm lucky enough to be able to focus on preventative care and lifestyle medicine, which is all about making sustainable changes, I still felt like I couldn't quite do what I wanted to do in the same way that potentially I could with coaching. So I came across coaching as a really fun area that I could work in and work again one-on-one with people, which is what I really enjoy. And specifically working with women in a similar life stage than I was in, where juggling kind of the work and the kids and health and everything else. So it just naturally went down that path and started exploring that and launched my business in 2020, which is right when I found out that I was pregnant with twins.
Before
the pandemic hit. So lots going on.
So business first, twins roll in. You're like, okay, here we go.
Exactly.
Here we go. Wow. What was the I love hearing people's reaction in the ultrasound room. How did it go?
Yeah, that was interesting because I knew I was pregnant and I was second pregnancy. So I was like, oh, so no big deal. I'm just going to go to the ultrasound appointment on my own. It's just a dating ultrasound. I told my husband, you don't need to be there. He was out of town for work.
And you're like, I'm a doctor, whatever.
It's fine. It's just a dating ultrasound. There's nothing to see. It's going to be boring. And And yeah, and then within 2 minutes of being there, the ultrasound technician told me there's two babies there. And just like the shock and the like, yeah, overwhelm that came in that moment. Yeah, it was pretty, it was probably the most shocking like moment of my life, to be honest. Yeah.
I should hope so. It does sound quite shocking in all the best ways and probably all the most overwhelming ways. But wow. Yeah. I didn't know that the ultrasound techs were allowed to say that. You know how sometimes they have to wait? But I guess they're like looking around, and especially they're ultrasounding a doctor. So you're like, why are there two blobs or whatever? Are they two different blobs? Would you have been able to see it on the screen? Okay.
I don't really, they're hard for me, even me to read. They're like a very specialized field. But she told me right away. And yeah. And they were two separate because my twins were boy, girl twins. And we didn't find out till later, but separate placenta, separate sex and everything.
How ignorant of me, but I truly don't know. Okay, cool. But then if they're identical, they should. Oh, wow. So there's even variations within it.
Yes.
The body is so amazing.
Yes.
Isn't that incredible? You're still working in your practice and you've launched your coaching business and you find out you have twins. You're having twins. Yeah, I keep saying, and then what? I feel like I'm watching a movie. Then what happened?
And then the pandemic hit.
The pandemic, that old thing, that old chestnut.
Yeah. And it was, navigating the pregnancy and everything at that time and figuring out when I was going to stop work. And I was lucky because I did have a health pregnancy. But obviously being pregnant with twins, it's a higher risk pregnancy and the more appointments and it's just more to manage and more risk. And I was planning on working, I think, until about 32 weeks or 30 to 30, depending on how the pregnancy went. And then the pandemic hit before I got to that point anyways. And there was just the general risk of just being in clinic and seeing patients with COVID and being pregnant and not really being sure what the potential complications might be if I were to get COVID. So it's definitely that added layer of stress there. But luckily for me, I was able to shift to virtual. So I was doing a virtual clinic from home and then just working still for the government part-time as well. And so I had some flexibility in my schedule. And I actually ended up being able to work later into my pregnancy than I thought would be possible because I was working from home.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So the craziness. Yeah, it's unfolded in an okay way. And did you go to full term for twins?
Yeah.
34 or 36 weeks?
Yeah, I made it to 37, which was like the ultimate goal was to make it to 37. I knew it wouldn't necessarily be possible, but I did. And my son was with the baby who was what we call twin A or lower down with breech again. So I was forced towards a C-section just because of the anatomy and where the twins were. So we planned a C-section. I made it. Yeah, I would say the last couple of weeks I was done and my body was starting to say like this is too much. And just the weight, because I had relatively large babies as well. So it's just like the physical weight of the babies.
You're like, get out.
Taking a toll. Yeah. So I was ready at 37 weeks.
You're done. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. And so life since then, how is it so that I guess you had them close? They're a couple years old now, three?
Yeah. So three, they'll be turning four in June.
Oh, my goodness. Congratulations. That's incredible. And you just have such a fascinating story. Thanks for sharing all that. Now I want to hear more about, first of all, what is life like with three, with your twins as a coach and continuing to work as a medical doctor? What does life look like now for you? Oh, my goodness. I don't know if you can hear my screaming children.
Nope.
Okay. This mic is, I have all this
real life.
Not pick up background noise, but real life is happening out behind this door.
Yeah. My son, my eldest is home now from school too. We might hear him as well. Yeah.
No, it's great. It's all welcome here. Yeah. It is all. I actually, sidebar, I was listening to a podcast this morning and she had talked about how she had a baby sleeping on her chest. And then I heard noises and I thought it was my sleeping one-year-old who was in the room next door. And then I just picked up my phone and I was listening. I was like, oh, no, that's her baby making those noises. We're all in it.
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Valerie, we got to get into the actual reason why I had you on, because we're going to talk about the four pillars of health for parents. But your story was so fascinating and inspiring. Help us all. Health as parents, it's hard. And it's hard to prioritize. It's hard to navigate. It's hard to know where you should be spending your time, energy, money.
Yeah.
So much about you changes, whether you're the birthing parent or not, just so much changes. So where do we even, I know you have four pillars, which sounds really nice. That actually sounds very calm and organized. So where should we start with this?
Yeah. I think the first place to start is just with like self-compassion and realizing, like, looking at the stage of life that you're in, right? And as busy parents, a lot of working parents, I know, listen to your podcast as well. So it's just, it's a busy time and there's lots going on. And I think it's all about doing what you can, right? And trying to find the key areas where you can really make these small sustainable changes that have a big impact on your overall health, because it's not realistic for most of us to quit our jobs and go live somewhere where we do yoga 24 hours a day. And that would be lovely, but it's not possible, right? It's all about realistic changes that we can make and starting small and then growing, right? As you make changes, slowly adding on. And I really focus on, like you said, those four key pillars, which are nutrition, exercise, stress management, and sleep. Because often those are the four foundational things where if we can really optimize those, it can really make a big impact in our day-to-day life. Yeah.
It's so true. So when someone's coming to you and all four are out of whack, nutrition, exercise, sleep, they're all just twisted on their head, where would somebody start? Like, what would be the first thing that you would probably most often, quote unquote, I'm using this cheeky, prescribe for somebody? Yeah. Huge. I love that. That's definitely, that's where I start with my coaching clients when we're getting into that action planning phase, where we throw everything, all the spaghetti at the wall and see, to see what like sticks or what's like the most sticky points. But it's true. It's like nothing can happen if you don't have the time and energy to be able to make any sort of change, because routines are shortcuts. Like they're not, doesn't mean that they're easy, but routines give us, they're easier to continue to do what we've always been doing. So even if you have the time, if you don't have the energy to even be like, okay, I'm making a behavior change, then nothing will shift. So I think that's a great point. I love that. And I really like what you said about the fact that they're all intertwined too. So like for a particular person, you would start in a different zone based on what the ripple down or cascading effect would be for that person. If they're needing to start with sleep because that's going to unlock other pieces for them, that's a really interesting visual and a way to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. Everything is related to, and same with the energy piece. If you're not eating foods that are nourishing you or fueling you, that can impact your energy. And if you're not moving your body, that can impact. So everything is intertwined and everybody will have, different sort of areas that they potentially want to focus on first. And because we don't want to jump in and do everything all at once, because that's just not, again, not sustainable, not doable.
I wanted to dive into each pillar, but I want to ask you, could we use you as the case study example? Like, how do you, when looking at these four pillars, what is it that you're doing against these pillars? And if you could give specific examples, like that would be really fun. And it just makes it more realistic. Or like it brings to, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It makes it more like tangible, if you will. So what did the four pillars look like for you in your life? You've got a lot going on. So it'd be interesting to see how do they manifest.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the first piece for me is like we talked about a little bit, like setting boundaries and figuring out like my schedule and what works for me. And I've always, since finishing my medical training, I've always made time in some space to prioritize my health. That's just a big part of my life. And so in terms of the pillars, so if we start with like nutrition, like for me, that's in my day-to-day life, finding like quick and easy ways to make like nutritious meals for me and my family. I love cooking. I love eating. So it's in a way easier for me because I do enjoy it. But I really focus on like a plant, I call it like plant predominant or diet, where I do focus mostly on plants, but I do eat meat and fish as well. But the vast majority of what I eat is plant-based. And that's, for me, is a really great way to get like all the nutrients I need and also like all the energy that I need from food as well. So that just looks on a weekly basis, finding out my meals in advance, making a grocery list, trying to stay as organized as I can, and then really quick and easy help meals my family. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
As it happens, I would say 80% of the time, there's wiggle room there and we do fun takeout meals and different things as well. But 80% of the time, focusing on plant predominant diet and healthy whole foods is what we do. Yeah.
Help me, you go through a drive-through sometimes. Do you go through a drive-through sometimes?
Sometimes, yes.
Sometimes. Okay. Okay, good. I'll take it. You hesitated, but I'll take it. And you have a 7-day plant-based meal plan that you are giving this audience here, which is so generous.
Yeah.
And I love that. I know that you were saying that it's especially for like, but not anything that is, I've yet to download it, to be honest. So I will be doing that right after this. Tell us more about that.
For sure. And I find that's one of the things that when I work with busy parents is that nutritious, healthy meals, like preparing those for their family can really feel overwhelming and difficult to do. Obviously, we're all really busy. So it's literally a 7-day meal plan. It gives you recipes, ingredient lists, grocery list, and then a plan to follow. And then you can tailor the recipes in terms of portion sizes and adding on or removing things if you'd like. But yeah, it's just really easy and you can start using it right away. And it just gives you ideas too. Even if you don't follow it exactly, it just gives you some ideas of what, you know, a balanced meal might look like. And this one's actually, I think it's all a one pan or one bowl. So everything you prepare is like really easy.
Oh, music to my ears. And I do have to say, so my family, we are omnivores. We like to eat all the different things. And I do plant-based recipes because I find like it's very easy to cook up a chicken breast or a piece of fish or whatever. But I'm not as excited about figuring out new ways to cook plants, perhaps. So, or I just get stuck in a rut. So I think that's fun.
Yeah.
Where it sounds like maybe you do this too, where like you could take a plant-based meal and add, you know, a chicken or a fish or whatever. And my kids actually really do like meat-based protein. So adding that to the vegetables and like exposing them to all those things, that sounds really fun. So I am excited about this. Thank you so much for that. That's exciting.
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. So number two is exercise for you and for the people you work with. What does that look like? What should that look like?
Yeah. So again, I think for everybody, it is a little bit different. And I always say like any movement is better than no movement. So if you're someone who doesn't move much right now, just adding in some sort of movement, don't focus too much on the type of exercise or the intensity or whatever, just do something. So even we know that it all adds up and the research will show that. So even doing like a 10-minute walk and then going up using the stairs instead of the elevator, like just any small amounts of movement that you do throughout your day add up and make a difference and actually have a huge impact on health and health outcomes in the long term. So I want to encourage people to just start where you're at and just add in whatever you can. And then in terms of like when I work with people and what I do, for me, I prioritize movement in ways that feel easy and doable that I enjoy. So right now, for instance, I'm doing like it's bar workouts at home. So it's a mix of a strength training, cardio, and flexibility. And I do 30-minute workouts. So they're quick and easy. And I do that usually 2 or 3 times a week. And I enjoy them and they go by quickly. And yeah, and it's something easy I can do at home. I don't have to drive to the gym. I don't have to go to an hour and a half class. Like it's easy and sustainable. And I get a little bit of the mix from the cardio, the strength, and the flexibility. And then I go to dance classes once a week, which I really love. And it's part of my schedule, right? Something that I know I do every week. I pay for it in advance. So it gives me that accountability. My husband knows, like my kids know, like Monday nights I go to dance class. And it's just so that having that in my schedule really helps as well. And then I love yoga. So when I can, I also do a little bit of yoga. And then just like normal being active as a family, get outdoors, go for walks, that sort of thing as well. Like with the kids, go to the park with them. Yeah, making that a part of my life where we're just active as a family. We get out as much as we can. That's what kind of sustainable fitness looks like to me these days.
Yeah, it sounds like it's flexible. It's not apart from the Monday night dance class. It sounds like you can go based on what the week looks like, what's going on with your family, what's on the docket, how you're feeling. Like I just think that's it's what's working for me right now. And I don't know if other people listening can resonate with that, where you're just like, gone are the days where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to wake up every single day at 6 a.m. and work out and do this HIIT class. And then on Tuesdays, I do spin and na-na-na-na. And it becomes almost more of a chore versus enjoyable and something you look forward to and where you're listening to your body and that sort of thing. In your practice and research, what are you finding? There's a lot of talk right now about strength training, about weightlifting. What are you hearing? What are some of the things that we can get excited about? Not as a should. We're not putting pressure on anybody, but just things to consider.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a really important topic, strength training, especially as we get older. Like we know that we lose muscle mass every year. Like I think once we reach our 30s, we start losing muscle mass. Back to trying to maintain it and increase it. So is something that I incorporate in my own workouts. And it's something that's really important, especially I think for women too, as we get closer to perimenopause and menopause, it's a really important time to focus on strength training. And there's a lot, like you said, a lot of research going into that and showing us the benefits. I think as a society, we were very cardiovascular exercise focused for a while. And now we're realizing that, yes, that's amazing. It's great for your heart. It's great for so many other things. But the strength-based training is really important as well. And trying to incorporate that again, where we can really see some big impacts.
It's like the low fat of the 90s. How everyone was low fat this, low fat that, no fat stevia, et cetera, or maybe not stevia, Splenda, all those things. And now we're like, 4% Greek yogurt is amazing or higher.
Yes.
And now we're like, okay, we don't have to just do cardio. Okay, cool. So strength, building strength and all that. Okay, we'll save stress for the end because that's a big one. Okay, sleep. Also very big. Lots of people talking about sleep. I'm a bit of a health junk podcast and sub junkie myself. I love hearing and learning about these topics. Sleep, huge. People are tracking their sleep. What are you noticing with people coming to you? What are you noticing in yourself? What are you noticing with the parents, moms who you work with? What is the state of sleep these days? So 99% of you listening are sleep deprived. Okay. Okay. Great. Yep. Yes.
Yeah. And I think as a society, like we're busy, right? There's just a lot going on. And I think one of the things that I see a lot with parents too, and like working moms, is that evening, I think it's called revenge bedtime procrastination, where in the evenings, it's like the only time we have to ourselves, right? Once the kids are in bed, like once you're done working, like it's quiet time, and it's easy to just want to indulge in that because we are tired. We're always giving of ourselves all day long. And we sit and we will watch something, like scroll on our phones, and we just get stuck in that cycle of it's easier to stay sitting and do that than to go off to bed, even though like we know that the next day we'll probably be tired if we don't get sort of the sleep that we need. So that's the common thing that I see and I have dealt with in the past as well, personally. So.
And what did you call that?
Revenge bedtime
procrastination. Hysterical. Love that. Okay.
Yeah. And there's research going into that too.
So. Oh, so true. Okay. Okay. So that's go to bed earlier.
Yeah. And again, like setting boundaries, right? Like we do with everything else, but like being mindful that yes, you do need that downtime and it's really important, but then also building in that more restful time, right? Whether it's like a bedtime routine, like we do with our kids before bed. I like to set like a reminder on my phone. Usually like I want to be like upstairs by 10 p.m. and then I want to be in bed between 10:30 and 11 personally, just with my schedule. So setting a reminder that's okay, like time to close the screens and go upstairs and get ready. And I have like my own bedtime routine that I do every night that just helps my body unwind. And again, there's a lot of research into that. Just like we do for our kids, our bodies as adults also need that structure and that routine and knowing what's next and slowly unwinding for sleep is really important as well.
You're so lovely. So I feel like you're not going to call these people out, but do you buy it when people say, oh, I'm somebody who only needs 5 to 6 hours of sleep?
Not really, no.
I don't buy it either, but I'm not a doctor.
Yeah. I think there is like a very small percentage. I forget the exact number, but there is a very small percentage of people, but it's not that many, right? Like it's like 90% of us like do need, closer to 8 hours. Yeah. And we can function on 5 to 6. And a lot of us probably function very well on 5 to 6, but it's not optimal in long term. We know that there's potential negative impacts of not getting enough sleep like for years and years in a row.
Yeah. What are some of those? Yeah. We're talking, and just so if anybody is in the thick of it and has the young babies, you're saying the years and years of like only sleeping for 5 hours a night, those are the negative impacts. And what are some of those? What happens when you're chronically sleep deprived?
There's a whole host of things that can happen, but definitely it's related to like metabolic issues, related to like metabolic health, risk of developing chronic illness over time as well. And I think it affects like longevity as well. So lifespan potentially and quality of life can be less over time. So there's quite a bit that it can impact. And just that's not even taking into account like just your day-to-day in terms of like energy level, concentration, focus. Like those are the immediate impacts we all know when we're sleep deprived. It's harder to focus at work. We're not feeling our best. We might be like crankier, more irritable. So those are,
Hungrier. I crave carbs. Is that because of the sugar or?
Yeah, our hormones. Our hormones are affected. So some of the hormones that regulate hunger are impacted by lack of sleep as well. And our stress hormones as well. So that can wreak havoc on appetite and hunger regulation.
Should we be napping?
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah. So there's a little bit of a controversial, like some people swear by it. I think most of the research will agree that you don't want to be napping for too long. You want to like maybe have one of those like power naps if you're somebody who naps. Really enjoys napping. So you don't want to go into the full sleep cycle. So you want to focus on sort of 20 to 30 minute nap so that it doesn't impact your sleep at night. So for some people it can be beneficial. I'm personally like not a napper. Like it's hard for me to fall asleep during the day. So I wouldn't be able to have a short nap. Take me a while to fall asleep and have too much of a negative impact. But you don't really want to be napping more than the 20 to 30 minute length of time. Yeah.
I know you're into yoga. I've been getting really into yoga nidra, or also known as non-sleep deep rest, where like for the people who like want to, the big macho guys are like, oh, it's non-sleep deep rest, but really it's just yoga nidra, which it's been done for millions of years. But have you enjoyed that as well? Other people listening, it's like a meditative, restful state. You're not sleeping. I would describe it, you're not sleeping, but you're not awake.
Yeah. It's somewhere in between. Yeah. And I think with that too, the research has shown that like the brainwave sleep, like you said, you're not asleep, but you get some of the benefits as if you were asleep. And it's a really great way to remove that pressure too. Like if you do have difficulty falling asleep, like doing a yoga nidra practice or another type of meditative practice and just removing the pressure of needing to sleep and just focusing on resting your body can be really beneficial.
Totally. Yeah, because there's sometimes that pressure of being like, okay, I'm feeling depleted. I'm feeling really tired. Again, I think we're speaking into ears of people who are like nodding along with us. And you get into bed and you're like, okay, it's a Saturday. The stars have aligned. I can fit in a nap. And then you lie down and you're stressing about, talk about stress, the fourth pillar, which is coming up. But you're like, that was so unenjoyable because you're stressing about, oh, I have this time. I should be sleeping. This is my time to nap. But to your point, yeah, if the focus is not to sleep, it almost takes that pressure off. So if anybody, I can put one in that I think there's a couple that I found online. I'll throw one in the show notes, like just a YouTube, and you just plug your headphones in. And exactly. It's lovely. Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. And so many free resources out there that can guide you. Yeah. It's a really great tool for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about stress. We all know we're not supposed to stress. We all are told don't stress. And then when someone tells you not to stress, you stress more. What is stress from a medical perspective?
Yeah. So from a medical perspective, like we're meant to be able to handle stress. And we do have a system with hormones that help us regulate stress and handle stress. And probably most people have heard of like the fight or flight response, which is really protective. Like it was meant to help protect us if we were to come across like a threat in nature, and then being able to either fight or flight, which is to run away. So having that surge of like stress hormones, like cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline are the main hormone. And then running away from the threat or fighting the threat. And then after that, having a period of recovery, where kind of the hormone will come back down. Back in the day, it might have been like going, hanging out with like your tribe people and like just like getting back into the zone, feeling safe again and protected and going back to normal. The next threat might come later on. But what that cycle really is, it's a cycle where the stress hormone will go up and then they come back down. And then you are in a normal state and then the stress comes again and it goes back up and back down. But what's happened in modern society is a lot of us are just in that kind of stressful mode all the time. And we don't ever fully like complete that cycle. And our stress hormones are always elevated. And we're not meant to really, I think, as human beings to be dealing with like chronic stress all the time. And society has just been, for a lot of us, there's just so many different stressors and things going on. And we never really get into that fully restful state where we can fully recover from all of that. So that's where we start having some of those chronic impacts of stress, and we can start seeing, feeling depleted, exhausted, it can be digestive issues, it can be tension in the body, we're at higher risk of developing cardiovascular disease as well, metabolic disease, like everything is impacted by stress and that whole cascade if we stay in that zone for too long.
Do you find in your medical practice that you find a lot of people coming to you with just all sorts of weird things that pop up? And would you say, I imagine a lot of you get that a lot. And would you say a lot of people, it comes from stress? It's a weird question, but you do know what I mean? Like it's,
yeah.
And when you're talking about the biological reason why we have stress, why we can handle stress, it is important. How do we, what are some good stresses? And is stress, I guess the question I want to know is stress helpful in like building resilience? Is it important to put yourself out of your comfort zone, feel a bit of stress, go on a podcast if maybe you're not super comfortable speaking on a mic or something like that? Like those are healthy. Yeah. Are there like healthy and unhealthy stresses?
Yeah, for sure. And I think like most of us could come up with examples of that too, where it's good to feel challenged, right? If we're feeling bored, that's not necessarily a good thing either. So you want to be challenged and you want to have some of those positive stresses. And even like when we think of life events, like getting married, like buying a house and moving, like all of those things are positive, but they're quite stressful, right? There's a lot that comes with those big changes. Definitely it's a part of life and you want to be challenged and you want to have some stress. But when it becomes obviously debilitating or is really impacting your day-to-day function and your health, that's when you really need to be looking at making some changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so where should somebody start to assess your level of stress, where stress is coming from in order to then say, okay, I'm going to make some changes to reduce my stress? Like how do you, I imagine that comes up a lot when you're coaching. That's probably number one. What are you doing to help people do that? Like how can somebody listening work through that? So I'm hearing it's, what can you remove or what are some of the low hanging fruit? What are the pieces that you're like, okay, say you were doing the dance class 5 nights a week and you're like, you know what, that's actually causing me stress. It fills my cup, but that's too many nights a week. I'm going to reduce that. And what can I add? So there's like there's a bit of a two sides to it. So it's like, what can I reduce? And then what can I be adding to fill my cup? I love the visualization of going back to your tribe and just like kicking your feet up by the fire and talking about the bear that you just ran away from or whatever, yeah. Having a laugh. So it's like that, the balance of those two pieces. And I like that because I think, again, as moms or as future moms or as parents, whomever you are, mm-hmm. constantly being told you need to reduce your stress is kind of unhelpful. It's like I didn't struggle with infertility, but friends of mine who are going through it or whatever, and people are like, just need to stress less and then you won't. And then you'll just get, and I'm like, I cannot even imagine going through that journey and hearing that. You just want to smack someone in the face.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's a really hard thing to hear. And you're like, I have, you have under the age of 4, 5?
Yeah, 7. 7 and yeah. Yeah. My eldest is 7 now. Yeah.
I like the idea of, okay, how can you remove the low hanging fruit? And what can I add versus constantly trying to think about how can I reduce my stress? What can I be adding to the mix or like adding into my life that brings joy that in turn then reduces my stress? Yeah, I think that's really nice. That makes me feel better, even just thinking about it that way. I love that. And oh my goodness, we could keep going. What are a couple things that you would say that you tell everybody that you work with where they're at? What is the advice you're constantly giving?
I would say it's to start small and start with one thing. Like, don't try to change everything all at once, but look at like where you think, you know, you can look at the 4 different pillars. You can look at time and energy management and just picking like one small thing to work on and making it sustainable and then adding on more to that, but not trying to do it all at once. And again, that self-compassion piece, right? Being compassionate with where you are in your life and starting small and then building on that.
I love that. Thank you. And where can everybody find you? I know that you do take on new clients in your coaching practice. You're probably not going to be promoting your medical practice in Ottawa here, but I'm sure people can look you up if they want to find you. I'm sure you're busy though. Tell us about where everybody can find you or even get coaching from you.
Yeah. So I have my website, which is my name, which is just like valerieherzog.com. So you can find out more about my coaching there. And I do have 2 different programs. I have a shorter 30-day program and then a 90-day program too, where we can go in more depth. And it's all, again, one-on-one coaching. So you can find all that information there. And then I'm also on Instagram, and that's where I hang out the most. So you can come and say hi there. I love connecting with people. Yeah. And yeah, those are 2 of the main places right now.
Amazing. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to connect. It was been so good to get to know you, hear your story. And thank you for sharing so transparently. And then for giving us all these tips. I feel nutrition, exercise, stress, sleep. Those are big areas, but I feel like you've broken it down into some like really key things. I feel like we're all in a bit of survival mode. So it's like I've got a few great nuggets from each of those 4 categories. So that's so good. It feels doable. You're making it feel doable.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing, right? You want to make it doable and not, you don't want to add stress, right? Like we're talking about.
Yes. 100%. Thank you, Dr. Valerie. It's been such a pleasure to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been so great.
Before we go.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I've been forgetting this. What is something that you are still trying to figure out?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. I think for me, it's the constant, like the work-life health integration, right? Like I feel like it's a moving target. So it's always shifting as we talked about, as my situation changes, as like family grows, as the kids get older. So it's just always about checking with myself and finding that work-life integration. I don't like the word balance so much, but integrating it all in a way that feels good for me and sustainable and yeah, that I like enjoy life and I feel present and healthy.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's such a nice way of putting it. Okay. I won't scream at you again and tell you to wait and cause your cortisol to go through the roof. I will just simply thank you again for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. This is really great.
Thank you for listening. You can access all resources mentioned in this episode via my website, andreabarr.com/podcast. And let's chat on Instagram. I'm at Andrea Barr Coaching and I reply to every DM I get. If you loved this episode, don't forget to quickly hit that button on your podcast app to give me a 5-star rating and drop in a review. It would truly mean the world. And if you're like me and love to share things that you love, send this episode to a friend who you think would appreciate this topic. Thanks again for listening, and I'll chat with you next week.